I've probably done some of the coolest stuff in the last 4 years that I've ever done in my life. And it had nothing to do with trying to get more money. The decision was kind of made for me.
It's like that weight is disguised as a floating
security.
Yeah, it's disguised as something that's like, hey, you're safe here. Don't leave this area because you might, you know, get lost or something. But then that is keeping you tethered. It's a chain.
It's an anchor for sure. And you think that the anchor is safe, but you're missing out on all the stuff you could get by floating away and going somewhere else. It's a really good analogy. It sounds like you need to write a book, Stacey. I think you need to write a book about the anchor.
It was the idea. I mean, when you talk about things like this and you discover how you felt during a situation and make these connections. Welcome back. Today, I have David Branscombe with me, and we are going to be learning all about his journey into Bitcoin. Thank you so much for joining me, David.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I've been a fan of yours for a while now. We need more podcasts, more voices, all that kind of stuff. And I know this isn't, you know, your one and only primary gig, right? You do hair, your mom, your wife, all that kind of good stuff so that you got to do. So I really appreciate what, you know, you doing this, just diving into Bitcoin, bringing it in. And you have a really nice kind of educational piece, right, to what you're doing. So thank you very much for having me. And I'm glad to help out any way I can.
Thank you. Thank you so much for watching the show. And yeah, it's hard to sometimes think about doing these things, but it's nice for anyone to get up and speak and for you to join me and share your journey because, you know, I like to be able to maybe reach people who aren't, you know, super deep into Bitcoin or know anything about Bitcoin so they can kind of understand it and why it was important to people and why they, you know, changed their life because of it, you know, took a different path. It could reach other people. Yeah, it's very important. It's very important to speak up and share your thoughts and ideas. So thank you again. And I heard you recently on a space. You were, I think it was on a Bitcoin Army space with Gemerald. It's a, you know, meet and greet for plebs, and he had you on there, and it was really nice to hear some of your story. And I want to kind of, you know, share that with people, share your journey, and share what, you know, what your life was like prior to Bitcoin. So can you tell us how you got started in it, or you know, what led you here?
Sure. Well, I'm kind of a bit of an anomaly. I was very blessed to be kind of pulled into Bitcoin through what I thought was a fiat job. But like a lot of people, I was looking for Bitcoin before I knew I was looking for Bitcoin, right? I have, you know, before we were chatting about, you know, family and kids and stuff, and I have two boys, and I remember when they were younger, it was just easier. Bills were less, and, you know, I just thought they weren't costing much money. And that's kind of the, that's the lie that, you know, you believe. It's like when kids are little or when things are easy and smaller, it's like, it, you know, it's less expensive. And then you think, oh, well, as things grow, as we grow and our lives go on, they're just naturally supposed to get more expensive. And that's not the truth, right? It's not the case. So I remember when they were little, you know, I used to read the books and like, you know, Dave Ramsey and Rich Dad, Poor Dad and all that stuff. And I would go by the adage of, you know, you should have 6 months of cash saved up for emergencies and things like that. I was like, okay, that's a great idea. Not realizing that at the time, it's like, well, I've also got like, you know, a credit card with a $30,000 limit on it. And at the time, you know, my bills were $5,000 a month. So it's like, it didn't make sense. But I was like, okay, I'll put that in there. And then every year I'd wake up or do taxes, and we weren't doing anything more extravagant. We weren't, you know, our lives didn't look very different. But every year that 6 month requirement got bigger and bigger, you know, and you wake up and your kids, and you just assume it's because life is going on and your kids are growing, but that's not the case, right? It was literally just, you know, inflation and, you know, and my time and my energy being stolen, but I didn't know it. I wasn't ready for it yet. And then a friend way back 2014, I guess, I was working with a company. Well, I had founded a company with a friend that I'd worked with previously. we were worked together for the nonprofit, the Better Business Bureau. And then we left and started our own company, and we were providing kind of contractual services like that. But we had an office that we'd gotten here in Austin that gave us free electricity as a part of our rent. And my, this guy that we hired, a really smart young guy, was like, hey, we're only using these computers like 8 hours a day. We should mine Bitcoin with it. And I said, well, what's that? So he starts kind of telling me, and he did a really good job of explaining what Bitcoin was. And this was about 2014. I think Bitcoin was, I don't know, maybe like $500 or $600 at the time. And listened to him for about 25, 30 minutes go on. And my partner looked at me and goes, what do you think? And I go, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Why would I want Chuck E. Cheese tokens? Why would I trade my dollars for these things? This is stupid. I didn't understand scarcity, digital scarcity. I didn't understand proof of work. I didn't understand the fiat system. And mm-hmm. so I said no to it, and I've been kicking myself ever since I really discovered it. I lost that company through some regulatory changes, and I had another company I had dumped a lot of money and time into. And I woke up in 2019 and I was just broke. Like towards the end of the year, I drove across town and had to go. I was looking for a job, couldn't find a job. I worked at Dell in the past. I mean, I was going on interview after interview and couldn't get anything. And finally, I was like, man, I'm out of cash. Like credit cards and bills are stacking up. I drove across town, hopefully to find a place to work where no one would see me, right? And started delivering pizza for Domino's and doing some stuff. Turns out I actually ended up knowing the franchise owner. So I started doing some other kind of delivery, food delivery between locations, stuff like that. But I just did what I had to do. It was very humbling. And this was 2019. Then the pandemic hit. And luckily for me, I had one of the only jobs that you could actually go work. There was very few jobs you were allowed to go work, right? So I actually made like really good money for that, for the pandemic, but it wasn't easy. My wife is a nurse. She was working during the day, and sometimes I'd be gone in the afternoons or lunchtime, and my boys were, 13 and 10, and they were at home by themselves all day. And we live in an okay neighborhood, but I still hated that. I just absolutely hated it. And great. So, but when everybody was at home, and paying off debt and doing, because they weren't spending money on vacations, we were out working. Like I was out working 10, 12 hours a day to try to, make ends meet. And it actually ended up being very good, right? Like, so mm-hmm. had some, my father-in-law helped me out with some debt. I paid him back. And so it was good, right? But it was a very educational, humbling experience. And then in 2021, I was just very depressed, like a lot of people were coming through, COVID and stuff. Emotionally, just a very dark place for a lot of people, was for me too. And I realized I got my degree in art. So I like working with my hands and doing things. And I hadn't done anything like that really in about 20 years, not just like in the last, few years because of COVID. That fiat chase and that hamster wheel steals that your passion for those kinds of things, right? And so I took I'd been on YouTube late at night, staying up late, and we have a small fish pond, a koi pond in the backyard, from back when bought the house when I had that company and we had the money for it. And I was like, I'm just gonna build something. I'm gonna build a raised grow bed because I've been looking at like aquaculture and aquaponics and stuff. And I was like, it'd be fun to kind of grow some vegetables and stuff like that. And I went to and spent, like $1,500, $2,000 on stuff at the hardware store that I should not have spent money on, and came home and just started doing stuff in my garage, like pipes and a pond liner and 2x4s and screws. And, it's like all this stuff and pumps and all this stuff, and started just doing the calculations, figuring out, okay, I want to make it a flood and drain system. It was just a problem and a challenge for me and something new to learn. And it felt good. Like I felt good for the first time in years. And my neighbor across the street came over and asked me what I was doing. And so I talked him through it. And he said, well, what do you know about Bitcoin? And I was like, I don't know much of anything.
Neighbor?
I had a little bit, but I'd been doing I got into it after the ETH merge, to give you a time frame, or right before it, like, so like a year before it. So, and I couldn't afford at the time, I couldn't afford an ASIC. So I was like, well, I'll mine with GPUs, but I sent it to NiceHash. And so I would mine on the Ethereum chain, but I would get paid in Bitcoin, right? I'd send them my hash, but you get paid in Bitcoin. So I wasn't actually getting Ethereum, but it was cool because I was like, oh, I can do this and I can spend a little bit of electricity and I can mine Bitcoin at home and it pays my entire monthly electric bill. I was like, that's a big thing, right? I was spending like 30, 40, 50 bucks in electricity, but I was paying off a $350 electric bill. I was like, this is kind of cool. And then after the merge, that went away. That's all I knew, right? Is I just had a little bit of Bitcoin. And he said, well, what do you know about immersion cooling? I'm like, I've never even heard of that. What is it? Well,
I was fascinated by that too. And I
learned so that company was, is called Midas Immersion. My neighbor across the street, literally right across the street, was the CEO at the time. He actually just passed away a few weeks ago. He was an older gentleman, but he hired me on, got me interviewed with the owner of the company and got me hired on. And I went on to do business development and I learned about immersion cooling, hydro liquid at the chip cooling, Bitcoin mining. And I went to work doing like business development with him. So I learned, and I thought I was just going to work with data centers, but then I start working with these Bitcoin miners. And I was like, these guys are cowboys. Like, I don't know what they're doing, but they're so much fun to work with. They're out in West Texas in the middle of no man's land. It's similar to, it's like they call them digital wildcatters, right? It's similar to the guys that went to find oil for the first time. And,
you went from doing what you had to do, you know, delivering pizza during COVID, to deciding to work with your hands and build things at home and actually like change some kind of direction in your life where you felt good and you got yourself out of that mental rut, you know? And then it's almost like you kind of change your energy and then your neighbor comes over and does this stuff about Bitcoin and you just said yes to it. Yeah. So if you
have no choice,
if you're a closed-minded person,
yeah,
and you just think, no, I'm doing what I'm doing, I don't even know about that, I don't care to learn, you would have been kind of just staying in that sort of mode. Mm-hmm. But you kind of like, I think, opened yourself up to that. You made a change. You know, I think change causes, you know, positive effects. Like, change is good, you know, right? So you decided to try something. You know, you had no choice, like you said, but you also said yes to this. You could have said no.
Yeah.
But you decided to learn about it. And then it took you from the pizza delivery to going into the Bitcoin world and working there, right?
Yeah, people that it's like, I didn't find Bitcoin, it kind of found me. But I think you're right. When I look at it, you know, Bitcoin's great, right? But ultimately it's just a tool that we use. Mm-hmm. And so you can use it for good or evil. It's up to you. But yeah, I think the real catalyst was the fact that I was broken down enough to realize I had to do something, anything different. And just that being open and wanting to do something and learn something different, I had forgotten how to do that in the 20 years I worked in, you know, just in sales and business development and tech. And it just, I needed that. In fact, that first company that did do well for a few years that I ended up losing in like 2018, or early 2019, that company also something that I was pulled into, right? So it's like, it's hard to always know what you should do and make the right decision. In fact, no one ever does it 100% of the time, but being open to when that opportunity finds you is probably more important than, you know, looking for the opportunity, right? You can look too hard and come across as either desperate or you're looking for the wrong reasons or whatever.
Because sometimes you don't know what you're looking for, right? Like, you're thinking you're going to take one direction in life and you think you want something specific, but when something comes to you and you know nothing about it, it's easy sometimes to say, I don't understand that. It's scary to say I'm going to learn something new and I'm going to go into something I have no idea about, or maybe you're skeptical about it and you just don't care to learn. So it's like, it's easy to just be closed-minded, but to get to that point where, yeah, you're just, I need to change something and just actually want to try new things is something, yeah, like Bitcoin kind of teaches you that, because you get to a point where when it does find you, you see it, you actually care to see it, you care to open your eyes to it. And, yeah. And then you realize how great the system is and how important it is and how it, you know, why it's a tool, why it's a really the best tool, you know, for actually protecting your wealth and your time spent working. With Microseed, you can engrave your entire seed phrase onto a durable titanium washer. It's the ultimate backup, simple, indestructible, giving you true peace of mind and knowing your seed phrase is secured for life. Use my link in the description to get your kit. Satoshis. So many new styles and fully customizable. Use my referral link in the description or in the comments for 10% off your order. The Bitcoin Advisor, for multi-sig custody solutions to store your Bitcoin, inheritance planning, and peace of mind. I'm so happy to hear that you see that, you see that you decided, you made a choice. Uh-huh. And that choice was something you didn't, you can't always go looking for something in life. Have to, you just have to be an open-minded person. And as you get older, and you have kids and you have a family, sometimes
it's hard
taking chances or taking risks, or thinking, why not just try something? That's not something usually people have the luxury or the ability to do as they get older. You get very set in your ways. So it's very nice to see that, that this is an opportunity you took. So
I have a bunch of friends living the last 20 years in Austin. It's a big tech hub. So there's a lot of, I have a lot of people that, our kids kind of grew up together. My boys are older now. One's 19, one's 15. And so we have that kind of network. And a lot of these people they haven't discovered Bitcoin, or they've been told about it and they're just not ready for it, or they don't trust it, whatever the case may be. And you see it, it's like they're stuck. Like they are literally stuck. And some of that, it's not just Bitcoin, right? Like you said, the idea of letting go of the thing that you're holding on to and just swimming out there and trying to find something else is frightening. It's super frightening. But you also don't realize that what you're holding on to is probably a weight that's just helping you sink faster and faster, right? So once you let go of that and you float a little bit, you realize, oh, it's not so bad floating. There's lots of other stuff floating by me. And then I can kind of pick and choose, what to grab onto or whatever. But when you're just staring at that thing and you've got that one grip on that thing, it's super hard to let go. And I feel really bad for, a few particular friends that I know well, and I've seen them try to, look around and try to go out and do something else. And I just can't help but feel grateful that, the decision was kind of made for me, right? The opportunity, I was pushed into at least one or two of those. And then, but now that I've realized it, I can't
go back. It's like that weight is disguised as a floating
security
device in the water. It's disguised as something that
it's not a floaty. It's not a life, not a life vest.
It's disguised as something that's like, hey, you're safe here. Don't leave this area because you might, get lost or something. But then, that is keeping you tethered to the it's a chain, it's like
it's an anchor for sure. And you think that the anchor is safe, but you're missing out on all the stuff you could get by floating away and going somewhere else. It's a really good analogy. It sounds like you need to write a book, Stacey. I think you need to write a book about the
anchor. It was your idea. I mean, you had that literally it's like you're swimming, and what a great, I mean, that's how you build on it. Like when you talk about things like this and you realize these things, you can speak to somebody about it and kind of discover how you felt during a situation and
yeah.
make these connections.
I think also, like, and this is, and I've been making some notes about it. I would love to be a writer. I don't think I'm ever going to write a book officially, but I would love to find somebody to help me ghostwrite it, because there's some, I was talking to a guy on who goes on X by my two sats. And he's in, he just asked me, it's like, you know, yeah, he says, I try to ask everybody this question. What does Bitcoin mean to you? What is Bitcoin? And the more and more I think about it, I think that Bitcoin is literally what I think God would want money to be, right? Which is challenging. You talk to a lot of Christians, you know, they think that, you know, they're like, oh, the, you know, the world currency, sign of the beast, Revelation, all this. I get that.
I thought of that. Yes.
Yeah. I get all that. But God, if you believe in God and creation, you believe that physics and mathematics, you know, especially the physics where energy is concerned, is the language that God built, created this universe, right? So it's everything happens along those rules, and you can't, no matter how much you want to, you can't defy those rules, right? You have to play within the rules. That's what physics are. And then the energy side of it is really interesting, because nothing in the universe happens without energy. It's either kinetic moving energy, or it's stored energy ready to be expelled, you know, whatever that is. And that's everything, right? So energy is kind of like the currency of the universe. Well, so you have Bitcoin, which takes the currency of the universe, energy, and the language of the universe, which is mathematics and physics, and puts those three together, right, in a very unique way. And so you can play with Bitcoin, you can play in the Bitcoin sandbox, but if you try to break the rules, you get flipped out of the sandbox, right? You can't really, ultimately, you have to agree to the rules that 1 + 1 = 2. You know, you mm-hmm. can't go all 1984 and say, no, it's, you know, this is 3, it's not 4. You can't do that because you, mathematics is kind of like God, it's infallible, right? You have to follow his rules. So if that's the case, then when you're talking about the analogy also, it just came to me, you're talking about like Peter in the boat walking to Jesus on the water, right? It's like he took his eyes off of the goal and he sank, and he didn't want to leave the boat because that's his safety. That's his anchor, right?
Oh, wow.
You're in the middle of the storm. If you want to get out of there, you have to take that risk. You have to take that chance, right? So there's a whole bunch of cool analogies I think you can draw from.
You should write a book. You should write all these ideas down. And I've known people who've never written books before and have actually written a book, because this is the type of stuff that I love about Bitcoin. And these are the connections I love to make, because I love how you put those ideas together, because I think about that as well. I think about the, you know, the creator, you know, so God being a creator is a design. So a design is a pattern, you know, it's mathematics, it's all that stuff. And I love how you connected the energy and the physics of the world all together. And, and when you think about if it's the currency God would want, it's because you can't fake it. Like you said, you'll get kicked out of the sandbox if you try to lie, because if you think about good and evil, you know, good is truth and, you know, transparency, and evil is this deceit, you know, and lies you know, false is illusions, you know what I mean? So literally people that argue that, you know, Bitcoin, if you are a Christian or you believe in a creator and you think that Bitcoin might be the scary thing, you should really take a look at it, because what you're living in currently is the scary thing. It's a thing that lies to you constantly, and you get deceived by it constantly. And also I think about it as, you know, when you think about God too, you think about free will and choice, and, you know, like how you talked about, you know, making that choice and believing and walking across the water instead of like sinking and being afraid. When you don't have fear and you have hope and you believe and, you know, you have this free will, that's what Bitcoin represents to me. Because if you have, when people talk about the dollar or fiat currency and CBDCs, And they think all crypto is scary. It's like Bitcoin is the like the you have freedom in your life when you have Bitcoin, but when you if you're stuck in a CBDC future, that's where you can be controlled. You don't have free will, and that is the opposite of what
you're living in 1984 at that point, right? Mm-hmm. And and man, there's a lot of directions you can go with that, right? There's a lot. Yeah, I think I will say this, that I feel very blessed because not just, you know, being in it and being kind of pulled into it, but the timing of it, like I wasn't fully, even though I was working in it, I wasn't fully sold on it during the last like 2021 bull run, right? So it went up to like 60 something, then went way down, then went up to like 40 something, and then went, and I remember, you know, watching that and I was still just learning about it. And then on the way down, I realized, I was like, man, I need to start. I used to look at it as an investment. And so I started kind of DCAing just whatever bit I could put in there. I started on Cash App. I, you know, would buy 10 bucks a day, just something, right? And it went down and down and down and down and down. And, but as I was doing that, I was learning about it. I was listening to like Robert Breedlove's first, you know, 10, 11 episodes with Saylor. I read The Creature from Jekyll Island. I read The Bitcoin Standard. I read, you know, a few different books. And I didn't understand Bitcoin, but I started to understand the dollar, and I realized it was just completely effed. It was done, right? I was like, it's only a matter of time before not just the dollar, but even, you know, the US and all this. That's what civilizations do. No civilization lasts forever. And I hope that, you know, the USA as it is lasts another, you know, 300 or 400, 500 years, 1,000 years. That'd be great. The longer it lasts, the better. But I was like, man, it's built on this house of cards and it's gonna fall. And I thought to myself, I've never been able to win this fiat game. Maybe there's something to Bitcoin. So I thought I did the math and started looking at it logically. There's a 100% chance that if I save in dollars, those dollars are going to buy less next year. If there's even a 1% chance that Bitcoin is going to appreciate about is anywhere near what I believe it is based on what I've read and what I've seen and the research I've done, then that's a 101% flip. Why would I not put my faith in something that's based on physics, math, and science, right? Because if I believe that those are God's languages, then, you know, that's where I want to put my faith. I don't want to put my faith in that the government's going to save me because I know nobody's coming to save me. So I made that switch, but I did it in a bear market. Right. Like I made that switch. It hit 20. I did suffer a little bit when it went down to 16K because it was around Christmas time and you got family and all that stuff. You know, that was a hard few months for me. But in February, it started kind of climbing out. Right.
That's how I was, too.
Yeah. So I want to say, I guess if I give anybody, if there's one kind of takeaway that you give to anyone, you know, people that follow you, whoever see this, right? The one takeaway I want them to understand is that it's not the Bitcoin that's volatile, it's the dollar and it's people. So people are emotionally volatile. That's why the price goes up and down. There are still big players in this market, you know, playing fiat games, trying to get more Bitcoin, trying to steal your Bitcoin, trying to drive the price down and drive everybody out of it so they can get your stuff. Just, I would like to say I was strong and held through that 25% dip because I wanted to hodl. I didn't. I had given up, right? I was like, I can't win at the dollar. I can't win at Bitcoin. I'm not going to sell it. I literally just gave up, right? Like, so going through that holiday, made it through the holiday, but man, I was just like, I crawled in a bottle a little bit, right? I was drinking a little too much, all this kind of stuff. It was still hard, right? Even though, and then you talk to people that are like, I bought at 65 and rode it all the way, never sold. You know, that's like, that's real tension. I got lucky with the timing. I came in at the bear market. So now everything looks good, right?
See, with me, I felt so much like you because I went through that same stuff. And I'm not going to lie, it was very painful. But for me, that was, it's just interesting that when you get into Bitcoin, it's usually during the hype cycles. And then when it does drop,
sure.
If we are going to have these types of drops again with what's going on today. But if we do, once you realize for some reason, so many of us were full on Bitcoin, 100% Bitcoin, no other crypto. Like we you learned more during that drop than you ever did. And I was so much more convicted in it than ever before. But it was painful, you know, but it was the weirdest thing because I felt like I was more convicted than ever. I believed in it so much more because of the fact that the other analogy I like, which I think Michael Saylor says, is, you know, it's a boat without holes in it or something, or a system that's not like letting your time and energy go. Like you're not in a boat with holes.
It's like not leaking.
Yeah. You're actually going to safety. You know, you're going to stay afloat with that. But then when it's happening and it's dropping like that, it hurts, but you know that it's going to come back. You just have to be patient. And so it's so hard to go through that. And I forget how painful it was now looking back. But it definitely was painful. And I think I was one of those people that as the price was dropping, I did sell, but I think I sold because, you know, there were times where we're like, all right, I'm just going to sell some of this because you need to pay bills.
Yeah.
And I was in a way, like I felt lucky at one point because when I bought the top, but then sold when it was to like 30, I sold some, you know, it's not like I sold it all because I didn't believe in it. I just sold some because I had to live life. Right. Then it hit 16 and bought more, you know, because it's like then I had some extra cash and I'm like, all right, I'm going to go back. And then you end up like feeling now it's even half of that price. So I was like happy, but also not scared. It was painful, but you know, like you're so convicted. So it's like a weird like feeling that you believe in it so much and you know it's coming back. So you know, you double down when you can.
It's a faith, Stacey. It's a faith. Right. It's like you're putting your faith in something, and until you understand what it is, until you understand how different it is from the alternative, that feeling that you have there, right? Cause I went through that too. The feeling is just, it's letting go of that weight that we're talking about, right? It's we grew up and we've lived in that fiat system. And you're talking earlier, you said, you know, it's like you're constantly lied to and deceived. No, it's not lies and deception. It is a lie, right? The entire system is built on the lie that it's a note, right? It's a promissory note. There's nothing behind it at all other than a promise from people that don't care about you and don't have your best interests at heart. So as such, right, it's always going to be a lie. Anytime they tell you something positive and makes you feel good, or that's meant to make you feel good, you know it's a lie. Anytime, and they're never ever going to tell you the truth because then everything would topple and they'd lose all the power, right? So
talking about that, I think somebody yesterday mentioned to me, because about like a lot of the stuff you see in the world when you hear people fighting and bickering and just all the news going on with the polarization in politics. They mentioned a word called, it was identity politics or something, he said.
Yeah.
And it was something where people, they're so trapped in being like, I identify as this group of people so hardcore that if somebody tells me anything negative or if they say something positive, I'm going to full on believe it. No questions asked.
Sure.
Because it's like part of your identity now, and you need to break free of that because I think you believe in this party, you know, one way or the other so much that you don't ever think that they have other agenda. Like there's no other agenda. They're not doing it. They love you or they care about you. Nobody like anyone. I hate to say it like that. Like but there's so much corruption and there's no, you know, there's no way to verify any of this stuff.
No.
So they could say whatever they want and you'll believe it because you identify as this, you know, and that's so dangerous.
It's that's a part of our psychology that is there by design, right? We, for survival, if you want to take God and his design completely out of it, just from an evolutionary standpoint, we are built and designed to recognize and identify with groups. It is their safety in numbers. It's one of the reasons why, you know, as a species, human beings are not all, we don't all look alike, right? Like, we have different skin tones, we have different mannerisms, we, you know, there's different facial features. All of these things, right, are an evolutionary response, because we would say, oh, you're like me, I like you, and I want to be like you. So that's why I'm drawn to you, right? So
is it like a trusting the psychology behind? Like, I trust you?
No, it's not even psychology. It's actually built into us for survival. Yeah. So if you take God out of it and you just go all the way back and you look at it, even just from an evolutionary standpoint, it's like, if I am, you know, I'm a Native American, right? And I look a certain way and I talk a certain way and all that stuff. And then you see Spaniards come off the boats with, you know, on horses, and you look at them and you think that's all one thing. The person and the horse is all one giant creature. You're fearful because they don't look like you, and they might've been a good idea, right? They could have, they eventually came and attacked them. Right. So it's like, there's an evolutionary survival thing to recognize someone that is like us, right? The issue becomes when we let our intelligent brain, or we don't let our intelligent brain override that based on something that's not like physiological, right? Like, it's a thought, it's a program, right? And I feel like the issue, the identity politics thing, yeah, it's a disease. It's real. Like, I was diehard, you know, Republican for a while, right? I'm more of a libertarian now. I voted Trump, and I like Trump better than the alternative, but he still has done a lot of things that I'm not happy with, right? And you start to realize, you know, what is it, Walker on X, right? He's always saying there is no red, there is no blue, there is the state and you. That's how I feel. And I feel like as you get older, you realize that it doesn't matter which side they say they're on. They're both going to lie to you for their own benefit. Right. And so it's a matter of, you know, how hard can you hold them in check? Is there checks and balances? Can you verify those things? Right. And the long and short of it is you can't verify it. So when you talk about that identity, you can also go to the destruction of the U.S. family, right? System, family system, mother, father, kids, single household, you know, being it, you know, especially single income, right? All of that's slowly been eroded and destroyed. You have a destruction of church, right? You had a division of church and state, whereas, you know, when we originally came here, it was based mostly on Christian views and Christian ethics, and that's kind of gone out the window as well. So you have this situation where people want an identity. Your family is who you choose to survive with to a large degree. And then you do find joy, great joy and fulfillment from them. But like, as a guy, for example, I can't stay at home too long. I have to go out and be a part of a team with other like-minded guys like myself, and to be able to provide for my family. And so even if I'm a consultant, I'm not like tied to a certain company or anything, there are still people I like to and prefer to work with. And then people that I'm like, I don't want to work. So I go out and I pick my team. You need that third place. You need, you know, you need, you can have work, you know, that's just for fiat or just for your bills and stuff. That's okay. And you can have just your home. And there's a lot of safety in compartmentalizing and keeping those two things a little bit separate. It's okay. But if you don't have a third place that anchors you, that when you lose your job, or when you, something happens bad with your family, you lose a loved one, or, you know, you have, you know, bad domestic situations, you know, violence, or, you know, divorce, you know, all these things happen. If you don't have something that's rock solid that you can go back to, that's always there and always the same, you know, for me, it's my relationship with God, right? But, and to some degree, that's church. Churches are still not perfect. They're made up of people and people are imperfect. Mm-hmm. But knowing I can walk into a church and I can say, you know, and I can say, oh, yes, I'm a Christian. There's a certain kind of set of rules that you kind of agree to, right? Mm-hmm. This is, Bitcoin is so revolutionary too, because we've had all of those third places stolen away from us. You don't even have sports, like extracurricular sports anymore. Cause like, oh, everybody wins. Everybody gets a trophy. You know, it's like, it's all been demoralized. Yeah. So we need that third place. And Bitcoin has been a really interesting new third place. If you walk in and say, I'm into Bitcoin, they're like, oh, you've done a certain amount of study. You kind of understand it. And you can tell it works, because if someone walks into a Bitcoin conference and starts talking about shitcoin, starts talking about ETH or something else, we're okay with them. We don't attack them, but we also don't really let them in, right? We kind of let them, okay, that's not really what we're about here. So there's this interesting third place that's happening. It kind of anchors us. And because Bitcoin is based in so much truth and math and science that you can't fake, it gives a lot of people that third place that they've been missing. And so,
you know, I love that you're saying this, because I'm a Christian, but I have a problem with institutions and man-made rules. You know, I don't love going, like, first of all, I'm Greek, so Greek church is like super strict.
Greek Orthodox. You know,
and I am like, me and my husband, yes, we're Christians, but I hate, like, any Greek person watching this is probably going to hate me, but you know, but it's like, we go to church and, you know, we did communion all our life, but now, you know, our kids have done communion a bunch of times, but ever since COVID, we're just kind of like, yeah, we teach you about faith and religion at home. We tell you things, you know, talk to you about life, and but we don't think you need to go eat off the same spoon as 300 other people. So I don't like that, like, you have to do certain things, and I'm not very good about, like, just because everyone's doing something you have to. Plus, it's just, I think you don't have to show off, you know, that you're praying, or, you know, you could do it in your own anywhere, you know. So I think that third place is in your heart. You know, it doesn't have to be in a building, but I think that that's what Bitcoin gives you. Because when we were talking, I was talking recently with the younger, with Nikki from the Orange Peel podcast, and she was talking about losing the third place because, or not never having one as a young person.
Okay. Yeah.
Because, you know, when we were younger and fiat was good, you used to be able to, okay, if you're not going to church, you're meeting up with friends somewhere, you have some sort of community, you have, you know, either your church or you have a group of friends that you meet up with, go to this third place and hang out, you know, but fiat stole that from these young people. Now they don't have a place to go because life is way too expensive. They don't have anywhere else to go hang out. They just go to their houses, so it steals a sense of community, whether it's meeting up with your friends, being your community. You can't go out and meet other people and grow that community. You have to just kind of, like, keep to yourselves. And I think Bitcoin, it grows that, because now it's like a digital, like me and you are talking, you know, it's like now we find people that are like-minded and realize truth, you know, and realize how we're being stolen from and deceived. So we can connect with others and find people all around the world that, you know, we can speak to this way and join each other on a call, and that community grows, you know. So we just have that, like, an anchor, you know, in life through Bitcoin, through this truth, you know.
Well, so I agree with almost everything you said, right? I will say this, you know, Jesus did say, you know, don't forsake the congregation, basically, right? Like, you still need that fellowship. You still need that. And it's important. Mm-hmm. Because one of the reasons we're doing this with this technology is because a phone call doesn't get the message across. It just doesn't, mm-hmm. right? The face-to-face that we are able to have with this technology, I would prefer to, you know, be able to fly to you and we meet at a coffee shop or something and have the conversation face-to-face, right? Or I come in and, you know, and we sit down with your family and we have food and, you know, so there's still a lot of that, you know, that is necessary, especially I think as a Christian, right? You want to do that, mm-hmm. but there's also nothing wrong with, you know, going and finding the right group. Mm-hmm. But just realize that, you know, no group is going to be perfect. Right. So right. I grew up Conservative Church of Christ, meaning we were not allowed to have any musical instruments at all, right? Even a harmonic pitch pipe was considered, oh, that's, you don't have perfect pitch. But like, and my dad was a minister, right? So we were in it. You know, as I grew up, I loved playing guitar and things like that. And I feel like you're supposed to use everything you have to the glory of God, right? So I was like, well, why would he give me this love of music and guitar right. and stuff if I didn't want to use it? So now it's like, I, you know, I go to a non-denominational church. I'm mm-hmm. friends with people who are Catholics, right? It's yeah. like, you
I
know,
like that.
it doesn't matter to me. It's kind of that core of like, we have these core mm-hmm. values, right? Like at the whole, we both believe that, you know, Jesus is the Son of God. We both believe that he's the way to God, right? You know, and how you get to him is not completely irrelevant, right? But how you get to Jesus, right? It mm-hmm. is, it's up to each individual person, right?
I like that because the non-denominational church idea is, it's nice because there's certain things, like you said, if I have these gifts and they were God-given, you know, like, why would I not, why is it bad to uh-huh. like that stuff in this place, you know? Sure. And that's why I just think there's certain things about, you know, certain institutions. So it's not like I still love Greek church. I feel like it feels like home. I still go, but it's not yeah. like I'm like there every week, like people,
it's,
you know,
different.
I'm not.
Yeah. It's different for me now. Like I grew up singing a cappella. So I like sight reading music. I like 4-part harmony. I like all that. I grew up with that. I like it all. But, you know, this Sunday at my church, it was, you know, it was a full band with horns, you know, I was like, yeah. okay, what, you know, and it's, yeah. it's different. It's not wrong. It's just different. But right. I think that's why there's a lot of analogies, I think, to Bitcoin also, right? Bitcoin gives you that. And I watched that with, I watched your last episode with,
Nikki. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And she's absolutely right. It's like the fiat system has put us in a position where you don't have these third places. Whereas before that, or before, you know, the serious corruption of it, you had that because anytime a new group leaves somewhere and goes somewhere, they're doing it because of that kind of persecution. And when they leave and they have to depend on each other and nothing else, there's no government, there's nothing, you have to have, it's not a third place, it's all places, right? Like you're living, working, going to school, eating, going out to eat, you know, you know, in the middle of the afternoon, hanging out at the same cafes, you're all going to the same churches because there's only one church, right? It's like all this stuff, all of these places are the same. And then that holds everybody accountable and things like that, right? So you need that community. We need it. Mm-hmm. And it's been nice to see Bitcoin. People get a little bit of the benefit and they start to feel a little bit better and they start to have a little bit of hope. That gives them more courage to change. And they're like, well, what else can I change? Well, let's go down the food rabbit hole. Let's see how terrible the fiat food yeah. system is. Let's look mm-hmm. at health and wellness and exercise, right? Should I be lifting more for muscle or should I be doing more cardio? What's the real mm-hmm. science say? What does it really say? And then you start with your relationships. You're like, oh man, I've been dealing with the same, you know, crappy relationship for 8 years. I'm not going to, you know, you start analyzing everything from a different lens, which is honestly what Christianity is supposed to do to you as well, and does to the right people, right? When you really accept it and go all in. So it's mm-hmm. Even before Bitcoin, I would have people say to me, don't get me wrong, I've screwed up a lot, especially in the last few years, but like, I would see people say to me, it's like, you know, you don't get upset over, you know, little things that happen. You don't freak out. You don't have a lot of anxiety. Your life seems to be going good. And I was like, well, my life is going good because I choose it that way. Mm-hmm. Like the bad stuff. Okay. Bad stuff happens. I just don't let it affect me. Good stuff. Oh, good's great. I'll enjoy it, but I know it's not going to be here forever. What I do know is going to be here forever is my relationship with God. And so having that anchor made me look and feel different around people. I think Bitcoin does that to people too.
Yeah. And I love that you say that because when you think about it, like the way you think of yourself, like if you kind of compare it to a parent and a child and you have a parent who loves you unconditionally and no matter what happens, you can go to that parent and you know, cry to them or whatever. And but they'll always look at you like you are their best creation, you know. So when you think of that relationship with God, it's like you have to think of yourself the way your creator sees you, as a shining light, as somebody who has unlimited possibilities for anything like that you choose to create. Like, you know, if you're created in the image of that creator, you should be able to also create your life the way you want. So you have to look at it from kind of that way, where if you grow up with a parent who is neglecting you and treats you bad and abuses you, you will think of yourself as worthless and not worthy of love or any certain thing. And maybe that could lead to a bad relationship because you think like, well, this is all I deserve because I'm not the best, or I'm not, you know what I mean? But when you look at yourself through the eyes of a loving parent, or if you grew up in a loving household and you have a relationship with God where you realize, hey, I can go to God for my problems, pray, whatever, and you'll feel comfort in that, you know? So it's just knowing you're worthy, I guess. I think.
No, 100%. During that time when I had been working with this guy for years on and off, trying to help him get this company up and running. But while I had my other company going, I had never really made any money with them, right? I was just like, I'm just working for equity is what I was doing. And I was kind of going through that. And I still worked with him through the pandemic, right? We just couldn't ever get off the ground. But I, you know, in 2019, when I'm going through a lot of those struggles, he would say, and I said, you know, I think maybe I'm paying for something. I'm paying for my poor decisions, which, yeah, you know, that's real. You have real life consequences for your decisions. But I was like, I was so far down, especially with COVID and everything else, that I was just like, I just don't deserve, you know, to ever get out of this. I don't deserve anything better. Right. And he made the comment. He was like, okay, wait a minute. Let's talk about your son, right? Do you want your son to feel the same way you do? And I'm like, well, no. I was like, well, why would God want you to feel that way either? Right. Like, are there consequences to our actions? Yes. And you have to learn your lessons, right, to make smarter decisions moving forward. But it's like my son now, he's 19. He graduated high school. He wasn't sure what he wanted to do. Maybe he'll go get an electrical certificate and become an electrician. Maybe he'll do something else. But until he knows what he wants to do, we're not going to go to college. We're not going to spend money for him to go to, you know, to not have a plan, right? Mm-hmm. So I got him a job working. He was working at, like, you know, Smoothie King, doing something like that. And then I got him a job working with these Bitcoin miners. And he's like, Dad, he's like, I need to find another job. It's like, I hate this job. And I thought to myself, I want him to appreciate the job, right? If I didn't care about him, I would say, you have no idea how lucky you are to have a job that pays you 18, 20 bucks an hour at all, right? I don't care how much you hate it. There are people, you know, that cannot find, like, 2019, I couldn't find a job, right? It's like all of this stuff happens. You have no idea how lucky you are. I want him to appreciate it and understand that, but if he never does, I'm okay with that. I'm like, hey, if I have taught him to provide for himself and to be, and to always look for those better opportunities, right? Then I did my job and I want him, and he'll be better off for it, right? I want good things for him. Do I want him to appreciate it? Yes, I do. But I also want those good things for him. So it's also another little analogy to Bitcoin, and to Christianity, right? It's like, I, this is not a multi-level marketing, you know, scheme, right? It's not like a pump and dump, rug pull, you know, shitcoin thing. When I share Bitcoin with, it's a mission. When I share Bitcoin with someone, I legitimately want them to know how good it is. And I want them to experience the same joy that I have with it. I'm not looking to take advantage of them. If I was in a standard fiat situation, you almost always have to try to take advantage of the other person. You're always looking, you're incentivized to take advantage of the situation. Bitcoin removes a lot of that, right? The more
it
people.
Reminds me, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It reminds me of one of my guests, John Fukuri. He had said that if I've talked about Bitcoin with you, it's my way of telling you I love you.
Bitcoin is his love language?
Yes. It's like, you know, that's me saying I love you if I've ever talked to you about it. Because
that's
just
really
want
good.
You to be, I love yeah. that quote.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of that.
No, it's true though, right? It's like and when you want people to know the truth, right? You truly care about them. And when you lie to them, you don't. It's very, very simple. It's black and white. You know, it should be very obvious. It's light and dark. It should be very obvious to people, right? It's not, to people because we are taught to live in the lie, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I think it's, all good things, right? Mm-hmm. God wants good things for us. I want good things for other people. And so like even just the last 4 years of my career have not been easy working in Bitcoin. I got dragged into it, but then I still had to, you know, still have to navigate it, and it's still rocky. It's a new industry. Right. And, so, you know, sometimes I get offers from people and I'm like, I don't want to work with them. That's a fiat game, or I don't like what they're doing or whatever. And then sometimes I just don't have anything to do at all. Right. But yes. it allows you to make that choice, I guess, mm-hmm. to, you know, want to work with better people, to want to do it. It allows you to want and expect better things.
Right.
And I think that's the key, right? If you can exit out of that fiat system, you're a lot less desperate. You don't have to make decisions based on where does my next dollar come from? And then where does my next $2 come from? And then four and then eight, because that's the only way to stay ahead.
Go ahead. I want you to finish first before
saying it's like that's the lie, right? That they have to do that to motivate you. But I've probably done some of the coolest stuff in the last 4 years that I've ever done in my life. And it had nothing to do with trying to get more money. It was, I have Bitcoin. I'm not losing my energy over time. So over time, I can actually work for less and less money, which is a crazy concept for people to think. So what I started doing when I had nothing else to do and no income, I would just look for excuses to help other people and to learn more things, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say, well, what are you doing right now? Well, I'm doing this and I'm trying to get this done. Well, that's interesting. Tell me about it. And so they tell me about what the problem is. And then I go research it for like 8 straight hours because I'm obsessed with it, with learning new things now. And I don't have to worry about, okay, do I have enough to pay my bills next month? Mm-hmm. Bitcoin's on the move, it's moving up. Okay, so my fiat value is going up. So because that time is not stolen, I can take more time and I'll just call them and say, hey, I fixed your problem. Let's do it this way. Like, wow, that's great. It's like, well, listen, I can't pay you. And I'm like, I don't care. I don't care now.
It's so true, because it's like there's so many people in the world now that don't have any extra time. They're strapped for, you know, working, and you don't have people who care about others, not because they don't want to, it's because they're burnt out and they don't have the ability to give you their time. So maybe many people do want to get back to what humanity should be about, is helping others and caring about others. But that's why society is so broken, because everyone is not able to do the things that we should, the things we want to do as humans is stolen from us. The part of you wanting to help is stolen from you. You don't have any excess.
I've been saying it for years. I can't remember if I heard it somewhere or not, but like someone said, it's something like, if the love of money is the root of all evil, mm-hmm. then the debt system is the devil itself. Right. So it's like it's so funny. You talk about anything negative, and this is such a weird feeling. That's why they call it being unplugged from the matrix, right? You look at anything negative at all, and I can immediately talk through it and trace it back to inflation. Anything at all. Yeah. Someone's like, oh, well, these companies are taking over, you know, doing this. Oh, well, they're able to do that because of this, 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 and this, which all leads back to inflation and the debt, mm-hmm. you know, the Keynesian economics, right? You're like,
school, medical, everything. Yeah, you're right. Food, medical, all these industries and how they want, like, it's all deceit and for making money. But that's why I think even the worthiness that you think of yourself when people think they're unworthy of good things or they've done something in their life that they deserve this pain and they're paying for it. It's almost like if you think back to some of those things maybe that you think you did that you deserve to be paid back for in a way that that's why you're dealing with this pain. It's almost like if a lot of those situations could have arose from deceit of some sort. Like you could have been in those situations because of a
yes.
deceit from fiat, deceit from a relationship, deceit 100%. From something. So all of that is lies, lies, lies. Like you turned to that for some reason. Like there's something you did in life.
Yeah. Let's go back. Let's look at a really fun one. I love this one. You can go back welfare, right? Mm-hmm. It's literally in the name, welfare. It's a fair to help you be well and keep you going when you need it, right? It's under the guise that it's good for you and makes you better and gets you through the tough times, right? But the welfare, right, they got the money. It wasn't ever paid for by through taxes and revenue and things like that. It always, from the beginning when it started, it was issued as debt, right? It was issued as inflation. So from the beginning, right? Well, then you get people that are hooked on that. They get off of it and they get a job. And then they realize the job is so much harder and so much harder for me to make ends meet than when I was just able to sit at home. So mm-hmm. They decide, okay, I'm just going to sit at home and I'm going to take that, right? Well, then they say, oh, well, you can't have welfare. And then it just steps again. You can't have welfare if you're a married couple. And they're like, oh, well, there's your incentive to stay divorced or not be married or whatever. Well, if you're not married and not committed to someone, there's always, always the opportunity for you to just walk away. So when things get hard and difficult again, you don't team up and join together and make the best decision for you and your family. There's an incentive there to just walk away, right? Or and then you have a cultural epidemic with all of these children growing up without a positive male and female role model. And surprise, surprise, when someone else comes along and tells them that you weren't designed or created the way that you were supposed to be, they lie to them like that, say you are created perfect. You're not who you're supposed to be. They believe those lies and then they're confused, right? Of course they are. And when you have that apathy from, oh, well, we do or don't have to be married, or we do or don't have to, you know, be godly people, or we do or don't have to do that. It's like all this. Well, then there's no rules and everything's mm-hmm. off the table. And all of that is incentivized and exacerbated by the fiat system, right? Because you can talk about the excuse to print money. Oh my gosh, like Planned Parenthood just absolutely mm-hmm. drives me up the wall. I've purposely steered away from conversations about it because of how angry it makes me. And it mm-hmm. literally was a target against low income communities, right? That's how it started. And it started again with debt, right? A grant basically to a person who wanted to destroy populations, right? This is like, and no one would give them the money to do this because it didn't make any sense to say, hey, let's murder our children. They literally had to get a grant from the government under the guise that they were doing something good by promoting safe sex, right? But that wasn't enough. Then it always goes further and further because of the fiat system. So it's like every single bad thing, almost every single bad thing, yeah. yes, ultimately, it's all up to our choice, but it makes it so much harder for good people, good choices, with all of that being flooded at them.
And there's so much hypocrisy in that, too, because it's like there's science that says we found possible life on another planet because of these molecules. It's like, oh, like if you think that life on another planet could be a organism, mm-hmm. but then life in a womb doesn't start when, you know, so it's like those are just hypocritical
It's
thoughts and
not
ideas.
about the science. It's about power, and it's about control, and it's about the gates letting people.
Yeah. And then there's this other thing that I struggle with that, you know, it's like, you know, you want to, you know, you want people to, like, the joy in life is having kids. You know, you want to, you know, have kids with somebody who is a good support for you to raise them in a supportive home, in a good home, whatever. But like, you want to do these things, but like the fiat system destroys that too. Because if I were to be having kids today, I would be worried about how I'm going to, you know what I mean? Like, if it wasn't for Bitcoin and finding this and knowing that there's some kind of path forward, yep. I would be scared to think, how am I going to take care of a family? You know what I mean? So it's like, you want to do these things because you think that that's the next step in life is to have kids. But a fiat destroys that too. So people are afraid. Even that's why I think the birth rates are low because of fiat too, because people can't live life comfortably. So they're terrified to bring another life into the world.
There's also fiat incentives to go to college, right?
Yeah.
There's fiat incentives to, it's like, well, you have to go to, there's a whole marketing scheme behind this. You have to go to college.
What Sorry. Did you do? I just dropped my mouse on the floor. That went crashing. I have it here so I can use it for marking my.
No worries.
But we're good. We're good.
No, but it's like, there's this whole basically fiat marketing scheme saying you have to go to college. You have to do this. You have to move out. You have to do this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and it's a lie, because all of those things make it harder under the, or get, make your life more difficult under the fiat system. If we got to a point where it was like, no, you don't have to go to college. You just need to learn to provide value, right? Mm-hmm. Proof of work, right? So you provide proof of work, and then you do, no, you don't have to move out and live completely on your own. Why would you not stay with your family? Why would you not buy, you know, a few, why would you not live on a few acres that, you know, give you access to farm your own, you know, grow your own, you know, cattle or pigs or whatever, you know, and then you build multiple houses. Well, the fiat system, the tax fiat system says that if you build, you are not legally allowed in most states to build multiple houses on a single property. I'm like, what is that about? Right. So it's like, All of these systems, right, eventually attack, you know, your livelihood, your ability to better yourself, to better your life, and to better the life of your family and those around you. And the people that are willing to say, give the middle finger to that and do what they need to do anyway, become the ultra rich. And they also become the ultra rich. They play the game better. And they create multi-generational wealth. Well, Bitcoin is the catalyst to help a lot of people do that. And we're going to see a huge shift from that, people that were close to the fiat spigot over to Bitcoin. And it's happening right now. My 19-year-old, I had this conversation with him all the time, and he's really tired of it. I'm like, listen, stay at home as long as you can. Yes, right. I'm a little selfish about it, but really it's because I wish I had done it, right? I wish I had socked money away into, you know, stocks and things, Google, Amazon stocks, you know, things like that at the time. You have a unique opportunity to stack a lot of Bitcoin and maybe be able to basically just retire and choose what you want to do for the rest of your life in like 5 or 6 years. It could literally be that fast. And here I am, I've been working 20 years. Still not where I want to be for, you know, to call it retirement, right? But then you also realize, oh, retirement's also a fiat lie. You know, you can't work 40 years and, you know, take a gold watch and then live off your savings. It just doesn't happen anymore. So
crazy how everything is a fiat lie. It's like
so much is, Stacey. So much. It's that's why we get called the crazy Bitcoiners at you know, family holidays and stuff. Because it's like,
well, it reminds me of my Big Fat Greek Wedding, where the dad is says, like, tell me any next, word, not the root.
Take a word.
Root,
yeah. Kimono. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's saying everything is tied back to the Greek language, but like, like, everything is tied back to fiat theft. You know, it's like, that's
I am Gus Portocallis for Bitcoin. Yeah, right? That's what I am. I am Gus Portocallis for Bitcoin, for sure. That's me. And
I love that.
My boys make so much fun of me, though, because at first it was just dad's weird job and I didn't really understand it either. But when, as soon as they got Cash Apps, because it was easy for me to send them cash and they had a debit card and stuff, I told them, I was like, hey, just make sure you save in Bitcoin. And my son would always use that kind of Poindexter voice. He's like, okay, Dad, I'll save in Bitcoin. You know, it's the dorky thing. But then
that's how they talk to me, my kids.
Yeah. Well, it's,
or they would, but you know, they see that I'm doing stuff and they're more, it's like more like, oh, okay. You're talking
a lot. That's the thing. It takes a while. Right. And now my boys are like, now it's just, they make that joke, but they realize it's a joke because they're like, Dad, I get it now. Right. They've been in it 3 or 4 years. They've seen the value, the fiat value appreciate. They're eventually going to realize what it really is. But you made a point earlier, you know, it's like I had to, I sold because, you know, I had life, I had bills and things like that. My son, when he, my 19-year-old, when he first got in a few years ago, you know, he, we went to Bitcoin in Nashville, Bitcoin 24, and saw Trump speak. And Trump said, you know, you never sell your Bitcoin. Well, my son heard that and he was just like, okay, so you never sell your Bitcoin. I'm like, I am 100% in Bitcoin. Like the less fiat dollars I have, the better. So I sell Bitcoin all the time. I will get a paycheck. I will put it 100% into Bitcoin. And then in 2 weeks, whether it goes up or down, I don't care. That's when I will cash it out to pay it. Now, is that a little scary for a lot of people? Dangerous? Sure, it is. But the more of us that do that, the less volatile Bitcoin becomes. In fact, it gets better and better and better and better.
Right. The dollar is worse. And I think it's so, I love that you say that because that's what living on a Bitcoin standard means. Like you're putting all of your fiat into Bitcoin and then you live off of that. So yes, you're selling a little bit here. You're as you need to live, right?
Yeah.
But it's nice because when you think about it, oh, it just went down $10,000 and now I have to use the money. Like, what was I thinking? But in the big picture, when you take a paycheck and think about how much money you are up or down, there's sometimes you're going to be having to sell it to pay for life where you're up $100 or $2. There's other times you're going to be down $100 or $2, but it doesn't matter in the long run. Like, you know, you're not selling $1 million in Bitcoin to pay for life $10,000 a month. You're selling
those. And when you start out, just putting a little bit of savings, right? Pay your bills off, put in a little bit of savings. So my 15-year-old had to get braces. It was long overdue, but we were now finally at a place financially where it's like, yeah, we need to get this done. But the reason we're there financially is because of Bitcoin. It's like, so we went in there. I love telling this story. We went in there and you can tell the guy who's giving me the price is clenched up waiting for me to get angry because he's like, well, it's going to be about $8,000 for this and you need to go get, you know, teeth pulled with a surgeon and stuff like, so it's probably going to end up being about $10,000. And then he kind of clenches up and I was like, okay, no problem. And he's like, no problem. I'm like, no, no problem. You know, whatever. And my 15-year-old's like, oh, $10,000. What the, you know, his eyes got big. And I was like, so how do we need to take care of it? He said, we could do half now and we'll do the other half, you know, on the date of it after you get the other. I was like, okay, fine. So we swipe it and do it. I use the fold card for it. And so I get some, you know, points back and some sats back and things. But we get into the car and my son was like, Dad, I'm sorry. It's so much money. I said, well, why are you sorry? He's like, well, it's $10,000. That's a lot of money. I said, you know, it is a lot of money. I said, you know how much daddy's paying for your braces? He's like, no. I said, $1,600. He's like, what do you mean? You're paying 10. I said, no, I'm paying $1,600 in 2022 money. He's like, how are you doing that? I said, because in bear market of 22, I bought Bitcoin under $20,000.
Well, the most
I ever bought it was $16,000. It's now worth about, at the time we were eating these braces, it's about $100,000.
Isn't that amazing? So
I said, my life got less expensive on the Bitcoin standard.
Isn't that crazy to think about?
23 and 24, right? That time when you're in that run and it's moving up like it has over the last 12 months and everything else, I couldn't get my money in fast enough. I'd have a big like credit card bill, travel expenses for work and things like that, like a huge, a big, big bill on a credit card that was due in like 2 or 3 weeks. I would get paid for that. I would immediately put it in Bitcoin because I was worried I was going to miss the next run. And turns out a lot of times that was the case. You never know when it's going to kick. And we give a shout out real quick to Jack Maulers, right? Just joined the Bitcoin army, which is fantastic. Yes. I'm a huge fan of his. I met him twice in person But I remember him on talking on a podcast or maybe his, you know, mailbag that he did or whatever. And he said, well, when we get to the Bitcoin scenario, so like, we just need everyone to just put all their money into Bitcoin immediately and then only cash it out when they need to pay their bills, like as fiat. Right. And he did that. And I when I met him in person, I said, hey, Jack, like, first off, the Epstein's banker comment about Jamie Dimon, yes, that was phenomenal. I said, but thank you for your inspiration. I was already down the rabbit hole. But when you said, let's go all in, I said, I went all in. I run my business and everything on the Bitcoin standard. And it was scary. I said, but it's the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life. He looks at me and I thought he'd say, oh, well, thank you very much, whatever. He looked at me and he gave me a hug, right? He's one of the most genuine guys out there. And he shows not just in, you know, the way he talks and pushes for Bitcoin, but in his work, in his personal life, everything, you know, he is trying to live that Bitcoin standard. And he was the inspiration that got me completely off fiat in like late 22. I was just like, you know what, screw it. Let's do it and see what happens. And, you know, it's just life just gets
I love that you said that. It's like that Midwest, you know, sort of whatever that is, like the Midwest, I don't know, hospitality, but like just kind of like the way you were just real, you know, he's so real and he's so young, but he understands things and he just, the way he says things, even the Epstein banker comments.
You can't fake being genuine. You can't fake it. So he's incredible. That's a big get for the Army. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I'm so happy. It's so cool because I mean, he's just, he's so real, you know, it's to have him is to have a person like him. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an honor, you know, and that's why I hope that with, this upcoming, we're having a Bitcoin Army meetup in Chicago. I'm setting that up, or it's actually happening. I set up a Bitcoin Army meetup for November.
Okay.
And, it's supposed to be a 2-day thing. So my husband's singing the first day.
Okay.
And then the second day, it's just at these like two cool places. And it would be nice if he could come because he's from this area, but I don't know if he lives here, but it would just be so amazing.
Well, we'll shout out to him and see if we can get him to show up. That'd be pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Chicago. I haven't been there in a while, but I'm a sucker for Geno's. So let's
If you could come out in November, you know, it'd be nice to have you here.
What are the dates? What are the dates on that?
It's going to be the 14th and the 15th. It's a Friday and Saturday.
I will be at a conference in Dallas a few days before, but let's see if maybe the Saturday works. I'll see what I can do.
Okay. That'd be awesome. That'd be so great. So it's going to be Friday. We'll be at this, this wine bar, but my husband's performing there. And Saturday is just at this cool. I really just wanted to have it there because it's in the suburbs of Elmhurst. It's, there's another Bitcoin meetup that happens in that suburb. Once a month, but there was this cool new place that opened that just reminds you of this really cool downtown lounge kind of place. And it's actually called The Vibe. And it really is such a vibe when you go in there. It almost looks like, I don't know, just the most amazing looking, like almost vintage, but new. And the owners are amazing. And I really just want this business to do well. So it'd be nice to, if I'm going to host an event, I want to do it at a place where I just hope, you know, just does well and just bring them business. So
can they accept Square payments? Are they accepting sats yet?
Actually, I had sent her a link about how to accept Bitcoin because I'm like, I really would love it if I have a Bitcoin meetup for people to be able to pay in Bitcoin. Uh-huh. But then I think I actually sent her the payment solution that Stake and Shake used.
Yeah.
Because I looked up what they use to give her a suggestion. But then now that I'm using Square for my business, I actually just got the Square registered for my own salon. And I love it. And I love that starting in November, you'll be able to pay with Bitcoin directly on there. I'm going to message her today and just tell her, I don't know if she's currently using Square, but I want to even tell her about converting her, you know, some of her income into Bitcoin directly.
Didn't they say it's free fees for like till 27 or something like that? So
I think at least a year for sure. I know that. So
yeah. I mean,
I'm going to message her today.
There's a few. This is the this sort of integration is the next big step, right? Like there's a few companies out there. There's BTC Pay Server, Zaprite, right? Like all these that are doing it. But that's the next one, right? Like I would love to not have to cash out Bitcoin onto my Fold prepaid debit card and then swipe, you know, so be good.
Yeah, that is happening today. Cause I was like, I just finished setting it up for myself and I'm trying to see what the certain payment system was that I sent her before, which I can't see right now, but I remember sending that to her. But now I'm thinking a lot of businesses use Square. So if she's already using Square, she'll be able to accept Bitcoin when that conference happens. So, but yeah, we know her. So I want to reach out today and make sure that there's some way to be able to pay for Bitcoin. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. It's kind of surreal when you're a Bitcoiner and you do that first thing. I went to El Salvador for a halving party event and it was like, I paid for my Visa on a Lightning node.
It was really?
It was surreal that I'm going to a country and I could pay them in Bitcoin. And then I spent Bitcoin at not every place I went, but a lot of places I went, like in El Salvador. And so when you get to do that, I mean, it just gets addictive. I went to Roatan, the island of Roatan. There's a really good Bitcoin group on there, Amity Age, that they do a lot of education and stuff. And we did a tour of the island with that. I paid for my hotel in sats. We went out to dinner and I bought dinner for our group in sats. It was like, and this guy, it was so funny. This guy was like, David, you didn't have to buy dinner for us. I was like, it was so much fun getting to pay in sats. Like it was addictive. It was so much fun. So
it's so fast and it's cheap. You know, you're not, I think some people, they don't like the idea of, they think, well, why would I pay in Bitcoin? I just want to save it for the long term. I wouldn't do that. But if you're living on a Bitcoin standard, then what else is there? Like you're literally converting all of your fiat into it. Yep. So that's how you pay. But also it's starving the system that we don't want to survive. Like we don't want deceit to continue. So it's like, if you want to starve that system, you will pay in Bitcoin, you know,
it has to be a medium of exchange. It has to be. So it's the next money. No question. I don't care how dangerous it is. I don't care what the, you know, the Constitution of the US actually says, who gets to define what money is, right? It is the new money, whether they like it or not. And it's going to happen. Is. So
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much. Thank you for this amazing conversation.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I would love to have you back again. This was such a great talk. And I hope you get to make it to Chicago. I know you're busy. You're going to be in Dallas.
I'm really going to want to try. I'm going to try. I'm happy to come on again and let's talk energy. We can talk mining. We can talk all that's kind of my, you know, day-to-day stuff. But thank you so much for having me. Thank you for what you do. And I just encourage you to keep doing it. Eventually it'll become your primary focus and mission. So keep after it.
Thank you.
Anything I can do to help.
Thank you so much. That really means a lot. I do love this. This is definitely I love what I do currently, but I think this is my passion. I really just love talking to Bitcoin people and finding out and, you know, their journey and just, I don't know, just it's amazing. It's so much fun. And that's why I love doing the real life Bitcoin conferences too, because in-person meetings is, something else. So looking forward to talking to you again.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks.
Have a great day.